Hello, I'm Connor A. Posey, Assistant Editor of HCP Live. Welcome to Doc Talk. A new study published in Gastroenterology created an interesting topic of conversation surrounding diet in patients with inflammatory bowel disease. Treatment can come in many forms, but how often do we consider diet as not just an addition to treatment, but treatment itself? The Diet to Induce Remission in Crohn's Disease, or DINE-CD, study compared diet's effectiveness in creating symptomatic remission in patients with Crohn's disease using two diets: the more restrictive grain-free specific carbohydrate diet and the more open-ended fruits and veggies-focused Mediterranean diet. As it turns out, the specific carbohydrate diet and the Mediterranean diet met symptomatic remission in nearly 50% of patients through the first 6 weeks of the trial in nearly 200 Crohn's disease patients. Specifically, remission was met in 43.5% of patients following a Mediterranean-style diet and 46.5% of patients following the specific carbohydrate diet. Today's guest was Dr. James Lewis, Associate Director of the Inflammatory Bowel Disease Program at Penn Medicine and the Chief of Gastroenterology at Penn Presbyterian Medical Center. Dr. Lewis was the primary investigator of the DINE-CD study. We discussed the role of diet as treatment for IBD, as well as defining the diets themselves and why they were chosen, including if, in fact, we can define the Mediterranean diet. Dr. Lewis noted the study was proposed by patients at the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation, who were looking for answers for diet rather than suffering through trial and error on the foods that trigger their symptoms. And overall, we touched on the role of inflammation in the study, how the diets may be implemented on a larger scale in the future, and how much adherence to the diet would matter in the long run. We hope you enjoyed today's talk.
For some background, how common are studies into correlations between diet and disease? And were there any studies that kind of led to this newer, larger study?
There have been a number of studies that have looked at the relationships between diet and Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis over the years, and they come in two main buckets. The first bucket are those that have tried to look for an association between dietary patterns and the onset of disease. Those have been historically relatively large cohort studies, and to summarize them, have shown for the most part that what we would consider eating a healthier diet, a diet that would be more consistent with high consumptions of fruits and vegetables and less consumptions of fatty foods, and particularly meats, are associated in general with a lower risk of IBD. And then the second bundle of studies are those that ask, once somebody has had a diagnosis, can we use diet or nutrition to change the outcome or the course of disease? And there, you can sub-break those studies down into those that have studied nutritional formulas, those that have studied nutritional supplements, and those that have tried to modify people's diet made up of whole foods in a way that it would improve outcomes. This latter group is the space that we were hoping to work in, because while nutritional formulas can be quite effective for Crohn's disease, they're not really a sustainable way to manage the disease in the long term, because people like to eat real food. And so we were looking for ways to find real food diets that could be helpful for patients. That latter group has some previous research, but not as much as one might expect, given the importance that patients put on what they eat. There was a recent systematic review done by the Cochrane Group that really identified only about a half dozen studies that looked at the ability of diet to induce remission in Crohn's disease, and about a half dozen that looked at its ability to sustain remission. And this sort of one-line summary of that systematic review is that none of those diets looked particularly promising. The good news is there's been a handful of studies done since then to help further enrich that field. And one of those is what's led to our conversation today.
Sure. So kind of another larger question before we get a little bit more into the actual study is, what is the role of different therapies for IBD and how do they complement the benefits of this, would be appropriate diet for patients with IBD? How do they kind of complement one another?
It's a really good question because for most practicing clinicians, the mainstay of therapy for Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis is going to be with medications. And, with the field has moved from the days when we had very limited medications to choose from for our patients to now where we have, it feels like every couple of years getting a new medication, new mechanism of action. And it's given us many, many, many more options to choose from. The one thing that's important to bear in mind is that other than the class of medications that we refer to as mesalamine compounds, which is most effective for ulcerative colitis and probably has limited efficacy in Crohn's disease, the rest of the medications that we have to offer our patients all to some extent impact the immune system. And we know that there are risks associated with long-term immunosuppression, things like developing serious and opportunistic infections, developing certain cancers. And so there are reasons why it would be nice to have an alternative to immunosuppressive therapies.
Sure. So that's actually a great segue into speaking about the study. So the study conducted was the diet to induce remission in Crohn's disease. So I was wondering if you could speak a little bit about, how that study was made up in terms of the trial participants and the way it was conducted. And I wanted to make specific reference to how there were two diets, the Mediterranean diet and the specific carbohydrate diet. And I was wondering if you could just explain those a little bit.
Sure. Before even going into the details of it, I'd like to really highlight an important feature of this study,
absolutely,
which is that in many ways, this was a study proposed by patients. I had the benefit of having one of my collaborators, Michael Kappelman, and he's been running a program referred to as IBD Partners for years in conjunction with another one of my collaborators, Robert Sandler. And in this program, the patients are able to propose research questions that they feel have not been adequately answered. And then other patients can endorse a question. And early after they launched this program, it became clear that one of the questions that was most important to patients was, what should I be eating? Or said another way, are there specific diets that will actually help my disease? And the questions went even further and specifically called out that they were interested in the effectiveness of specific carbohydrate diet. And that led us to design a study to compare the effectiveness of specific carbohydrate diet to some other diet. And so we had to decide what that control diet would be. And we thought long and hard about what the options were that were available to us. And the two main things that we were considering were, well, how about if we just had one group follow their usual diet? And the other was to pick a control diet. We opted on picking a Mediterranean diet as the control diet because we had concern about the ability to recruit and retain people if we said to them, we're interested in studying how diet may improve the course of your Crohn's disease, but for half of you, we're not going to do anything. We just want you to continue having your symptoms for another 12 weeks and let's see what happens. So as an alternative to that approach, we went with a Mediterranean diet, which would be very consistent with what the USDA would recommend that all Americans be consuming. So it's a diet composed of lots of fresh fruits and vegetables, fish and some lean meats as a source of protein, as well as vegetable proteins, very limited consumption of sweets and refined sugars, and the use of olive oil as a predominant fat. Their traditional Mediterranean diet also endorses mild to moderate, I guess, you know, limited consumption of wine, particularly with meals. I will say now, we provided participants with food in this trial, and I'll talk about that more in a moment. We did not provide them with wine. And so for those of your listeners who are less familiar with specific carbohydrate diet, it's also characterized by consumption of most fruits and vegetables, but elimination of grain, so that patients are getting rid of complex carbohydrates for the most part, and the carbohydrates they do consume are those that are found in fruits and vegetables. So by eliminating grains, it's also a gluten-free diet, for example. And participants can consume most fresh meats, including red meats, which would be uncommonly consumed on a Mediterranean diet. And I emphasize fresh. These are not processed meats because those processed meats would typically contain, you know, sugars that would not be consistent with the diet. Okay. Specific carbohydrate diet also eliminates almost all dairy. There are some select cheeses that you can consume, and there's yogurt that can be consumed as long as it's been fermented for 24 hours, which pretty much means you have to have homemade yogurt because commercial yogurt is only fermented for a few hours.
That's very interesting.
And so those are sort of the characteristics. And then, so we enrolled a group of patients who had established Crohn's disease with mild to moderate symptoms and randomly assigned them to follow the two diets for the next 12 weeks. And as I mentioned earlier, for the first 6 weeks of the study, we provided participants with all of their food. We provided them with enough food for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and two snacks a day. It came in prepared meals that all they had to do was heat and eat. And they were provided by the same vendor who sourced the foods from all fresh ingredients. And then at the end of the first 6 weeks, the participants needed to provide for their own food, though they did have the option to purchase foods from the vendor, but relatively few people purchased foods from the vendor in the second 6 weeks. And then lastly, I'll just say in terms of the overall design of the study, the primary outcome was at 6 weeks. So at the end of the point when we were providing them with their food, and we focused on, as the primary outcome, was symptomatic remission. And we also looked at what we referred to as CRP response and fecal calprotectin response, which basically meant you got your calprotectin or your CRP below a certain threshold and at least a 50% reduction from where you came in among those who had elevated levels at baseline.
If I could just ask a quick question about the design itself, aside from the effectiveness and the benefit to patients with IBD, were there any like greater health benefits, risks considered when choosing which diet was going to be compared against it? You know, obviously you said the Mediterranean diet is a very like healthy diet recommended. Was that thought of when designing the study?
Yeah, there were a number of reasons why we selected a Mediterranean diet. I alluded to one, which it is basically what the USDA recommends. Mm-hmm. It has been shown to be associated with a lower risk of Crohn's disease in those studies that I was mentioning before that look at pre-illness diet and your likelihood of going on to develop Crohn's disease. So that was in its favor. There have been some limited studies that had suggested following a Mediterranean diet was associated with improved symptoms and quality of life in IBD. And then thirdly, and I think really importantly, is it has been associated with many other health benefits, in particular, reduction in cardiovascular disease and reduction in some malignancies. So those could be viewed as an added benefit to following a Mediterranean diet. So that, you know, even if it didn't help their Crohn's disease, we thought, well, maybe people will get other health benefits from following this.
Yeah, absolutely. So going back to the study itself, and you know, you had alluded it yourself, both diets achieved around 50% remission in the patients. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how significant that was, especially thinking if patients don't follow the diet maybe strictly after those first 6 weeks are over, like you mentioned, they don't receive the food, they would have to either do it themselves or they would have to buy the food. So how significant is that number?
Yeah, so in the short term, about half the people in both groups had what we would consider as resolution of their symptoms. I think an important aspect of the study that we were cognizant of when we were designing it was that while both of these diets probably in many ways are healthier than the average American's diet because they really put emphasis on, you know, eating fruits and vegetables and getting things like sweets, you know, cookies and ice cream and things like that out of your diet, that the Mediterranean diet for many people is probably substantially easier to follow in the long term. Now, I have discussed this with others who have questioned that, and the counter argument to this is that the Mediterranean diet is more of a philosophy. There's a general description, but I can't give you like a list of things and saying, well, you can eat this and you can't eat that. For those who enjoy having a much more regimented diet, the beauty of a specific carbohydrate diet is it's got a very well-defined list of you can eat these things on the specific carbohydrate diet and you can't eat these other things. And so you can construct your meal plan around those things that you can or can't eat on a specific carbohydrate diet, where making an effort to follow a Mediterranean diet involves more of a judgment call. One of the big residual questions in the world of diet as therapy for inflammatory bowel disease is how adherent do you need to be to the diet for it to work? If in fact you need to be 100% adherent, let's say to a specific carbohydrate diet for it to work, that undoubtedly could be a challenge for people over the long term. I'm not saying it's not doable. I've definitely had patients who say it just becomes the way that I am, and this is just what I eat. But it takes a real commitment. If that's the case for Mediterranean diet, we'd have to figure out like what is the component of Mediterranean diet that is essential that you need to be 100% adherent to, whether it's something you need to be consuming or something not consuming, and figure that out, because the Mediterranean diet is much more, as I said, more of a philosophy than a specific list of things you could eat or not eat. And I think that sort of unanswered part of the science has implications on what the long-term outcomes might be as people try and follow these diets over the long term.
Absolutely. I appreciate you bringing up those larger questions, because my next question was very strict, which is, do you believe the Mediterranean diet is an effective treatment option for patients with IBD? Yes or no? How do you feel about it?
Yeah, so I routinely recommend it for most of my patients with IBD, but I go into it very aware of the results of this trial, some results that we haven't talked about up till now, which is that normalization, the inflammatory markers, CRP in particular, was very uncommon with both diets. Essentially under like 10-12% of people had normalization of their CRP. We did a little bit better when we think about calprotectin, where we had about a quarter of the people with improvement in their calprotectin. But because of the low proportion of people who had normalization of their CRP, when I talk to people about diet as therapy, I make it very clear to them that our goal is, whether we're using medical therapy or diet as therapy, our goal is to both make you feel better and to resolve the inflammation, because persistent inflammation is a source of long-term complications of the disease. So we can try this if you want to use this as your primary therapy, but we're going to reassess a few months down the road to see where things stand inflammation wise. And if there's persistent inflammation, I'm going to, have another conversation with you to think about, is this really the route that we want to stay with? For some people, it might very well be. And for others, we may need to look for an add-on or alternatives. Whether it's a different diet or adding another therapy onto your regimen.
So you generally portray it as more of a case-by-case basis rather than saying like, oh, this is going to be a long-term solution for you.
So I portray this as an adjunct to therapy that may have benefits for your symptoms of your Crohn's disease and may have other health benefits. In a small proportion of people, it may also be able to suffice as a sole therapy for your Crohn's disease, but we need to go into it eyes open, be willing to change course if it's not meeting the goals of therapy. And I think that is true with every nutritional therapy, whether I was using specific carbohydrate diet, whether I was using Crohn's disease exclusion diet, whatever we're using, we have to go into it eyes open, and we want to make your symptoms better, and we want to make your inflammation better. I think one thing I would bring up about, one thing I'd like to bring up about these diets that we studied, and I'll raise Crohn's disease exclusion diet here as a third diet that I commonly prescribe, is that all of these diets probably entail consuming more fruits and vegetables than the typical patient with Crohn's disease consume, and in fact, than the average American consumes. And so many patients and their providers are very anxious about telling those people with Crohn's disease to, to consume fruits and vegetables. But I think what we've learned in the last couple years is that it's okay for patients to consume fruits and vegetables with certain relative contraindications. None of these studies have studied people who have stricturing Crohn's disease with significant strictures of their intestines. But in the absence of that, I think all of these studies are providing evidence that fruits and vegetables need to be an important part of the diet of people with Crohn's disease.
If I could just circle back a little bit and talk about kind of the structure of care when patients are seeking it. What does the modern IBD care team look like when a patient's kind of seeking whole care, like in terms of the diversity of specialists, physicians, different specialists, dietitians? How does that generally play out?
I can sort of speak to to my approach to this. And then I think that everybody's practice will be a little bit different, but with some commonalities. Although I have spent a lot of time thinking about what people should be eating who have Crohn's disease and doing research on this, I still don't have the skill sets of a trained dietitian in terms of counseling my patients. And likewise, I don't have the same amount of time to go over in detail how to follow these diets. And so I view the role of the gastroenterologist is to educate the patient about the potential value of diet as a therapy and the sort of places in the disease course where it makes sense to try diet. But I then encourage those patients who are interested in pursuing this, I encourage them to see our dietitian to get real coaching on ways to effectively implement this in their life and to provide some long-term counseling towards this. And I really think, in all honesty, that's the only way that you can do this in a way that patients can understand, can get the diets right, and make it work. I mean, there are, I guess, some exceptions to the rules, and obviously some patients are going to be better learners using online resources and the likes, but I think that engaging with a dietitian, making sure that you and the dietitian are on the same wavelength as to what you're planning for that individual patient is really important in an effective way to do this.
Kind of following that, you know, obviously patients are going to want help with their symptoms. But on a larger scale, in your opinion, how do you see these diets kind of reaching larger patient groups? And, you know, do you see these patients strictly following it? How do you see the diet kind of working its way into all types of care for IBD?
When we were planning the DINE-CD study, I always had this long-term vision that if specific carbohydrate diet came out as a clear winner, meaning was clearly better than Mediterranean diet, that there would be for-profit companies who would basically go into the business of providing SCD ready meals, either, you know, the ingredients, you know, prepare it yourself, or prepared meals like we were using in this study, and that it would really take off as a business. I didn't envision it as my business, but I thought that there were people who work in that space who could really, like, the same as, I don't know, not to endorse anybody, but I think like Jenny Craig provides, you know, prepared meals for weight loss. I sort of envisioned that was where the field could go for Crohn's disease. And sometime down the road in the future, when we have the clearly established diet that is the clear winner over other diets, maybe that still will become a possibility. In the short term, I think the model of provider education, nurse education, access to dietitians is probably the route that this will go. And, you know, part of it is us really having more clinical trials done to define what diets truly are effective, what is the right setting in which to use them. And then we can make it mainstream the same way as prescribing medications are mainstream.
I'll say, you know, what was the larger role of inflammation within the study?
Well, this was a unique study in that we didn't require everybody to have documented inflammation coming in to the trial. It allowed us to see whether there would be a differential impact of one diet or the other based on the presence or absence of confirmed inflammation. It turned out that about half of the people had evidence of inflammation at the time of enrollment. That was based on either elevated calprotectin, elevated CRP, or if they happened to have had a recent colonoscopy documenting mucosal breaks, we considered that confirmed inflammation. one of the things that was interesting was that the outcomes were nearly identical whether or not there was confirmed inflammation at the time of enrollment. When we focused on the outcome of symptomatic remission. And so you can interpret that a lot of different ways, but one possible way of interpreting this is that these two diets were equally effective in controlling symptoms, but maybe those symptoms were independent of inflammation. And in fact, we know that in Crohn's disease, there's not a great correlation between symptoms and inflammation.
And if we could follow that and talk a little bit again about outcomes, how much did adherence to the diet matter in the long run for the patients?
It's a really good question. We assessed adherence to diet based on participants' self-report. And if you focus on their self-report at week six, we did an analysis where we compared the outcomes between the two diets in those who reported being adherent to the diet all of the time and those that were adherent less of the time. And again, interestingly, the outcomes were almost identical whether people reported that they were adherent to the diet all the time or less than all the time, particularly if you looked at the sort of relative effectiveness between the two diets. The results were almost identical, but even also the sort of absolute effectiveness in achieving symptomatic remission was pretty similar, whether they were adherent all the time or some of the time, which is interesting in many ways, particularly as I had alluded to earlier, that while Mediterranean diet is more of a philosophy and specific carbohydrate diet has a strict list of you can eat this and don't eat that, it does raise the question of whether for those people where specific carbohydrate diet is effective, maybe there is a little bit of leeway and maybe we could figure out what are some of the things that people could add in without compromising the effectiveness.
That's a very interesting point. Thank you for sharing that. Is there anything else you'd like to add? Any final thoughts besides that?
My final thoughts are the following. I want to thank again the many, many patients who participated in this trial, the patients who proposed the trial, the providers who served as investigators for this trial. I want to point out that this study was funded in part by PCORI, by the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation, and from a Sherman Prize. Giving you a sense of the scale of what it takes to move this forward. And I'd also like to encourage, those patients who are interested in learning more about diet and other therapies that are available to them, that they really check out the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation's website. There are really countless materials on there that are useful. And it's a great way for them to get educated. And in the meantime, I think we all should keep looking forward to, the next trials that are going to come forward and how this field is going to evolve over the course of the next decade.
I would like to thank Dr. Lewis for taking the time to speak with me today and discuss a very interesting topic, how diet can be treatment in patients with Crohn's disease. If you are looking for more background and new studies on IBD, visit our website at hcplive.com and check out our Ulcerative Colitis Condition Center page. And as always, follow us on social media, on Twitter at MD Magazine, and like us on Facebook at HCP Live. I'm Connor Iposi. Thanks for listening to Doc Talk.